Welcome to the History Reviewed channel, where we analyze the lies and deceptions of history. A topic I've been talking about for a number of years has been this guy, Ramaphosa, who is the president of South Africa. And today I'm going to show you a bunch of stuff to explain to you why I am so suspicious of this guy. In the year 2000, when I went and wrote my book Government by Deception, which was my warning to the whites of South Africa that South Africa could become a Zimbabwe, I went and met a number of ex-military people from the time of apartheid. And the highest ranking guy that I met and spoke to was a guy called General Tini Groenewald. Groenewald had been the head of military intelligence for 20 years. If there was any guy in the country who knows what's going on behind the scenes and who knows all sorts of inside information about all these characters like Ramaphosa and other enemies of ours, then it's General Tini Groenewald. So while I was talking to him about the future of South Africa and asking questions and so forth, at a point he came up with the topic of this guy, Cyril Ramaphosa. And Tini Groenewald said to me, there's this guy, Ramaphosa, and he's the second most popular black in the country. The only black more popular than him is Nelson Mandela. And then he said something to me. It's almost, I'm talking from memory, so you have to be careful here. I think he mentioned that the CIA was courting Ramaphosa and that they believed Ramaphosa was a capitalist. But Groenewald told me Ramaphosa is a hardcore communist. And then Groenewald really dropped a bombshell. He said to me, if Ramaphosa ever becomes the president of South Africa, the whites are finished. That's exactly how he said it. He said, the whites are then finished. That's it. Game over. Now, Ramaphosa was a black who ran a trade union. So, these trade unions are virtually without exception, these trade unions are all communist fronts. So he ran a trade union, he created a trade union. Then later he teamed up with these communists who'd been fighting an actual war from outside the country. Now when the blacks came to power, all the blacks who were politically connected went into politics. But shortly thereafter, Ramaphosa and another guy, they went into business. And Ramaphosa and this other guy, the other guy's name is Tokyo Sekwali, these two black guys who are politically connected, these two black guys suddenly go into business. And the next thing you know, is that these guys are billionaires. Billionaires in South African rands. However, they might even come close to being billionaires in US dollar terms. At the very least, they are worth hundreds of millions of US dollars. So, how do two black guys who have no business experience, no connections except politics, go into business and the next thing you know is they are billionaires within a couple of years? Doesn't take them long. Well, they obviously have some connections, and you'll see the connections to the Jews. I suspect that these blacks, as best I can remember, these blacks were given chunks of companies. These blacks were literally given just huge bundles of shares and stocks in existing big corporations for at no cost. And it's no wonder they, quotes, became billionaires, because the money was literally handed to them on a plate. They were just given shares and big chunks of companies, and the next thing you know is they're as rich as hell. Jews and liberals were the driving force in all of this. But deep down, these guys, especially Ramaphosa, is a white-hating communist. So I'm going to show you a bunch of things about Ramaphosa that you won't normally be shown. This little piece of film footage that I'm going to show to you here, this is from this year, 2020. It was in early 2020 that this Cyril Ramaphosa that you see here on the screen, that he ordered a lockdown due to COVID, and that's his secretary there. And initially he said the lockdown is only going to be for 3 weeks. So he issued the lockdown in March, and the lockdown was going to end in the middle of April. However, in a news conference, which you're about to see, he suddenly makes a joke and he says, well, he didn't say which year it was going to be. So the ignorant, groveling, pathetic journalists laugh at this stupid joke. But when this joke got out in the media, etc., it actually pissed off lots of people in the country, lots of people, because he's shutting down the country and he's basically destroying the economy. At this point in time, we've got 10 million unemployed in a country of 50 million. So it's the first time that we've gone over the 10 million mark. That is 30% unemployment. And all of this comes just from the stupid lockdown. And at the time that I'm recording this in August, the lockdown is still in place. So it started late in March. Lockdown is still in place. And it will probably be in place until the end of September at least. And who knows in what varying forms it may still be around. But the damage to the economy is tremendous. And people have lost large amounts of jobs, etc., etc. But here he is telling his stupid joke. So you can listen to the joke that he tells about which year.
Beyond the end of the lockdown, and I don't know when the lockdown will end. Some people are saying the 16th of April, but when we announced it, I didn't say what year it will end. I just said...
So anyway, there's the idiot telling his stupid joke, which pissed off large numbers of people. Now I want to show you what a liar he is and how anti-white he is. In 2018, Donald Trump sent this tweet. He said, "I have asked Secretary of State Pompeo to closely study the South Africa land and farm seizures and expropriations and the large-scale killing of farmers. South African government is now seizing land from white farmers." And he quotes Tucker Carlson and Fox News. And all of this is totally correct. This same Ramaphosa had actually said, long before Trump put this out, this same Ramaphosa at the end of 2017, I think it was, the same Ramaphosa had said that they're going to seize the farmland without compensation. They're going to seize white farms without paying for them. And the way the law actually works is they don't just have the ability to seize the white farms. They can seize your house, your car. They can seize anything. This is a true, full-on communist regulation that they've got. So anyway, as you also know, there have been farm murders that have been going on since the 1990s. We've had farm murders almost non-stop for at least about 25 years. And you're going to hear Ramaphosa on video saying that, firstly, there are no such things as farm murders. There are no farm killings of white farmers. He'll say it doesn't happen. And he says there's no seizure of land. Then I'll show you what a liar he is and how he contradicts himself.
There are no killings of farmers or white farmers in South Africa. There's no land grab in South Africa.
So there it is, out of his mouth. No killing of farmers, no land grab. But let me show you something. You're now going to hear the same Ramaphosa sometime earlier where he tells you that they are going to seize the land. In fact, he was the prime mover at the ANC conference. I think it was in December 2017. He was the prime mover at the conference of the ruling party where he said that they must push forward the land seizure agenda. He was the guy behind it, and everybody agreed with him. So listen to what came out of his mouth back then.
Decided that we are now going to return the land to our people. We are going to expropriate land without compensation.
So you can listen to it again where he says, we are going to return the land to our people. We are going to seize the land and we are going to seize it without paying compensation. In other words, the government's going to steal the whites' farmland.
Decided that we are now going to return the land to our people. We are going to expropriate land without compensation.
So here's this communist lying dirtbag, and it should be evident to you from these two videos, this guy is a white-hating piece of communist shit. Here is a front page of the Jerusalem Post from 2013. And this is also Ramaphosa, and I'm going to introduce you to his best friend, this guy. This is the chief rabbi of South Africa. This guy's name is Goldstein, and Goldstein is the top Jew in this country. And as you go further into this video, you're going to see how chummy and cozy these two are. But first, I want to show you a few other things about the businessman, Cyril Ramaphosa. You're going to find out a few things about this billionaire businessman. I want to show you a few things about the blacks, and especially about Ramaphosa and the Jews. Here is a quote from none other than Nelson Mandela, and he said, "I have found Jews to be more broad-minded than most whites on issues of race and politics, perhaps because they themselves have historically been victims of prejudice." Mandela actually became an attorney, and he worked for Jewish attorneys in Johannesburg. Is it any wonder that after working for Jews, Mandela became a communist and a terrorist? How the heck did that happen? Do you think the link to the Jews might be part of the answer? Here is a photograph of Nelson Mandela. This is in about the 1990s, at the time when the country was being handed over to the blacks. There is Mandela, and next to him is a much younger Ramaphosa. Big buddies. Communist shitbags. Let me show you a little bit about the history of the businessman Cyril Ramaphosa, pictured here. Everything that I'm about to show you in these pictures was not put together by white people. This comes from websites that were created by blacks and Indians called WMC scams. And WMC stands for White Monopoly Capital. Now let me tell you, if you want monopolies in South Africa, you don't need to go to whites to get it. All the monopolies, almost all of them, are Jewish. But the problem for the whites is that non-whites see Jews as white. So, a lot of the Jewish problems, as viewed by the blacks, actually, they think that these are white problems. They think that these are whites. But instead, virtually all of these things that they are pointing out about the dirty rich, all the filthy scams and things they get up to, all those things are actually not conducted by whites. It's conducted mostly by Jews. This guy here, Rupert, in this particular meme here, which says WMC scams, and it says hash Rupert puppets. Rupert is your Shabbos Goy. This is the richest non-Jew in the country. And he is busy trying to take control of South Africa, and he's trying to use business tricks to control politics and so forth. So the non-whites, the blacks and Indians who were looking at all these dirty people, they were saying, well, these are all the puppets that are controlled by Rupert. And by the way, Rupert's best buddy is the Jew, Nicky Oppenheimer, of Anglo-American. And Anglo-American is a worldwide monopoly that controls the diamond market. So that's a total Jew scam right there. Seizing the entire global diamond market and monopolizing it. That's been an Oppenheimer Jew scam since about the 1940s, if not earlier. I think probably going back earlier, maybe even to the time of Cecil Rhodes. I just want to show you some of the puppets. You see this woman here, Her name is Helen Ziller. She pretends to be a Christian and she's married to an Afrikaans guy. She is a Jew. She is faking it as a liberal and she's a commie. This guy next to her, I think this guy's name is Trollope. I think his name is Trollope. And I've wondered either whether he's Jewish or at worst, if he's not Jewish, then he's some kind of weak, pathetic Englishman. But I think there might be a bit of Jewy stuff going on there. Ramaphosa is regarded as one of Rupert's puppets. And I can't comment on any of the other people here in any way. But I want to show you more about Ramaphosa. So here's another one of these memes put together by the blacks. And there is Rupert. And it says, Ramaphosa has been captured by white monopoly capital. So this is old Ramaphosa. And he's controlled by Rupert. But Ramaphosa's stinking rich in his own right. Another one that says, hash, white monopoly. White monopoly capital turning out in Ramaphosa's support. No vote, Ramaphosa. And this is outraging the blacks and the non-whites because they are against the super rich. And they're finding that this guy is buddies with the richest of the rich. And they're finding that the richest of the rich are coming up and they're helping him and they're buddies with him. And he's talking highly of them and he knows them so well. And you'll see how well he knows them. One of the scams discovered by the non-whites is a thing called NHI, National Health Insurance. And this meme is put together by them. Turns out that Ramaphosa's got a brother, and the two brothers are now billionaires. And so this meme says, the grand plan, National Health Insurance billions about to be looted by the Ramaphosa brothers. And then they also, the non-whites say that, well, Ramaphosa is busy sleeping around as well. He's married, but he's got a whole bunch of girlfriends, including this woman who I think is Indian or some kind of Indian mix. But these are all his girlfriends, and there are possible other unknown girlfriends. So they are really pissed off because he's married. And so another one saying, he's a liar. Unfortunately, liar spelled wrongly, but it says, Cyril Ramaphosa, a definite liar by profession. And this is another company that he's related to, Bidwest. And as you can see, the joke is, here's Ramaphosa with all that loot and white monopoly capital while he's running the African National Congress, the ruling party. So white monopoly capital deeply, deeply in bed with the ruling party. Then there are some radical black communists who have an organization called Black First, Land First. They openly want to kill whites, by the way. They're even worse than Julius Malema. But Black First, Land First, they had this to say about Ramaphosa. Ramaphosa is part of the corrupt team that is guided and aided by white monopoly capital and his standing as deputy president of the country, that's what he was at that time, serves to facilitate further corruption. So here is this guy who suddenly becomes a billionaire. He's a communist who suddenly becomes a billionaire. The next thing you know, he's back in politics. The next thing you know after that is he becomes the deputy president of the country. And shortly thereafter, he is the president of South Africa. Now, isn't that funny? What a meteoric rise this man has had. He must be really, really clever. Here is a newspaper headline from the Sunday Independent from, I think, 2017. And it talks about Ramaphosa and his womanizing. So he's busy womanizing and busy trying to gag the newspaper and so on. But anyway, so again, this also comes from the blacks. It says, Cyril Ramaphosa, an ethically corrupt politician, cheater, and serial womanizer. So that's what blacks think of him. And later on, you're going to see how highly the Jews and the chief rabbi speak of Ramaphosa. And they say, oh, he's such a gentle character. However, he has got some black blood on his hands. This is Ramaphosa having a laugh. There was a time where at one of the mines that Ramaphosa has a stake in, where blacks went on strike. And the next thing was, they called in the cops and they shot a whole bunch of blacks. And they massacred a bunch of blacks. I can't remember how many. It may have been around about 30 or so. But it horrified the blacks. And it was a mine where Ramaphosa's got a stake in it. So this is known as the Marikana Massacre. And so, you know, once he's a billionaire and he's part of the white slash Jewish group, or rather part of the white monopoly capital, now he's shooting his own kind. That really ticked off a bunch of blacks. Another one from the blacks of white monopoly capital scams. This is his brother, Douglas Ramaphosa, and it says, brothers in crime, fools people of South Africa, looted billions from national health insurance by secret deals between NHI and Altron Group of his brother, Douglas Ramaphosa. No mercy for poor people's health. As you can see, not so... greatly spelt, but anyway, this is what I picked up from websites run by blacks. But just to show you what blacks were saying about him, what a dirty dog he is, how he's in with the whites, how he and his brother are stealing from national health insurance, they're as corrupt as hell. And this is non-whites who were saying all this, not whites. Another one saying, South African economy is being captured by Ramaphosa brothers. Ramaphosa brothers, corrupt and dirty. National health insurance captured. And another one from the blacks. And it says, it's got these people, it's got Douglas Ramaphosa, Cyril Ramaphosa, and another guy called Sifo Pityana. And it says, corrupt Ramaphosa deploys brother Douglas to run his illicit businesses. Sifo Pityana obliges. So you see, once white monopoly capital gets in among the blacks, everybody's dirty and everybody's making big money and doing what the hell they please. Another one from the blacks, it says, they are hiding their corruption, misdeeds, and loots, turning public welfare into private gains. And then it says, national health insurance captured. So there you can see how they feel about them. Another one, the grand plan of the Ramaphosa brothers oligarchy. And it shows national health insurance with Ramaphosa, his brother at a company called MediSwitch, and it shows how they are busy moving monies around that shouldn't be moved around, and it's ending up in their pockets. So again, from the blacks, they say charges against Cyril Ramaphosa: violence, womanizer, anti-national, corruption, fraud. So there were a lot of blacks who were against this guy. And so when he stood up to become the president, etc., they drew up this thing and they said, the most corrupt candidate ever. So this is by black standards. The blacks are saying that this is the most corrupt of the blacks. And we know all the other blacks are as corrupt as hell. But even they are saying this guy is more corrupt than anybody else. And here's another screenshot from the news. This was from the time when Ramaphosa said expropriation of land without compensation from white farmers. It was all over the news. And then suddenly he denies it, and then he does this, and then he says that. This guy will lie on a dime. He'll lie when he needs to. He'll talk his shit, and then he'll carry on with his sneaky stuff. Let me show you why I think Ramaphosa is a Jew. Most whites, especially Christians, don't realize that in order to be a Jew, the process is very different to Christianity. Anybody can convert to Christianity. You literally just go and say, I take the Lord Jesus to be my one and only savior, and bang, that's it. You're a Christian now. You can decide in the morning when you get up that you want to be a Christian, and by that afternoon, any Christians that you've told will accept you. It's as simple as that. You don't need to do anything special in order to become a Christian. And Jews themselves have fled from Christian mobs in Europe who wanted to kill them, and then they run to a church and they quickly fake convert to Christianity, and they walk out of it, and they walk out of the church, and the priest tells the Christians, you can't kill him, he's a Christian now. So that is how easy it is to become a Christian. And Jews, of course, are constantly telling whites, you must let non-whites into your country. You must let these people into your churches. You must let them sleep with your daughters. You must let them get into parliament. You must allow them into universities, into the military. You know, Jews are advocating multiculturalism, multiracialism, diversity, and anything goes for the poor white man and woman. However, Jews have double standards, as is usual, and what they advocate for whites, they don't advocate for themselves. So, I just want to show you the process of converting to Judaism, then I'm going to explain something to you. So, here on WikiHow, they explain the process of how to convert to Judaism. So it says, Judaism is among the seminal religions of the world and is the first known monotheistic religion. Please, that in and of itself is a lie, but anyway, in which only one God is worshipped. Lie. It preceded Islam. I'm not going to carry on with all this nonsense because it's busy telling you how fantastic it is. But anyway, let's take a look further down at the steps of how you convert to Judaism. So, it says, number one, understand that, like any religious conversion, converting to Judaism is a big step. Do you believe in and worship your God in the same way, shape, or form? Okay. Then number two, research Jewish laws, history, and customs, and talk to Jews about their religion. Figure out what you are getting into and determine why you want to do it. Be aware that Judaism is a major commitment which will affect every part of your life, will last as long as you live, and will even transfer to your children. It also says Judaism is based on the commandments, of which there are 613 in total, though many are not applicable today. This is true. Jews have got a vast number of commandments apparently for themselves. It's a whole lot of complexity you don't want to know about. Then it says, speak with your family about your intention to convert. Next one is, if you are converting because of marriage, speak with your future husband or wife to determine the best course of action, including which denomination you will join. It says, not many rabbis will convert people just because of marriage. The potential convert must be sincere and want to convert because of spiritual feelings and not just because of marriage. So see, Jews are already making this thing more difficult than normal, eh? You don't just convert just because you want to marry someone Jewish. There are three main branches, all with differing levels of observance and ritual. And we will ignore the rest there. But as you can see, starting to get a bit more complicated, a bit more resistance. Once you feel you have sufficient reason to convert, make an appointment with a rabbi to discuss the process. Ah, you see, there's a process. You can't just get up in the morning and say, oh, I feel like I want to be Jewish. Bang, it's done. It's not like Christianity. It says, be prepared for the rabbi to try to dissuade you or turn you away three times or more. Okay, be prepared for the rabbi to try to dissuade you or turn you away three times or more. Many rabbis consider this part of their job. The goal is not to prevent honest seekers from converting, but to test the individual's commitment and to make sure that becoming a Jew is truly what he or she wants. If you are persistent, show that you know what you're getting into and are still committed to doing it. The rabbi may eventually decide to start you on the path to conversion. So you see, it's a long process. And you now got to meet with the rabbi, and the rabbi is going to try and get you away from this. The rabbi isn't going to let you in. These same rabbis are telling whites, oh, let everybody into your country, let everybody into your religion, let everybody into your government. But when it comes to them letting everybody into their religion, no way, no way. Point number six, unlike in many religions, converting to Judaism is not fast or easy. You will need to spend at least a year, sometimes two or more, studying. Many organizations offer night classes and living a Jewish life before your conversion is finalized. Your studies will cover the basics of Jewish law, history, and culture, and you will also receive some instruction in the Hebrew language. If you are a teen or child who would like to convert to Judaism, realize that very few rabbis will let you convert, and you also have the obstacle of family not allowing you to practice your faith. If you are in this position, it is recommended that you get Jewish books, study Judaism as much as you can, and maybe even try living Jewish traditions, such as not eating leavened bread during Passover. When you are aged 16 to 18, go to a rabbi and start talking to him or her about conversion. Remember, you don't need to officially convert to join a Jewish community. You can go to services anyway. However, certain aspects, such as reading from the Torah scroll or wearing a prayer shawl and tefillin, may only be done by a Jewish person. Suddenly you find Judaism is full of all kinds of roadblocks to stop you becoming Jewish. At the end of your studies, you will take a test to determine how much you've learned. You will also be questioned before a Jewish court. Remember, in some of my videos, I've mentioned a thing called a Jewish court, that Jewish courts exist in different countries. In every country where Jews live, they've got a Jewish court. And here it tells you openly about it. And Jewish courts, by the way, the rabbis act as the judge, and they can pass sentences. I have many, 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 many questions about these Jewish courts and what do they get up to. So anyway, a Jewish court is called a bait din, consisting of three authorities about adherence to the halacha, Jewish law, as part of conversion proceedings. So, you've had to go and talk to a rabbi. You've had to get past the rabbi. You've had to then go and study. You've had to spend at least a year, if not more, studying. And you've had to pass tests. And you now have to go to a Jewish court. And they're going to question you. Isn't this a long-winded process? And these are the people who tell us, no, let everybody in, let everybody in. Don't have anything standing in their way. But look at what they do. 8. If you have passed all these steps, a conversion ceremony will be scheduled. It will involve three things: acceptance of all the commandments of the Torah and rabbinic enactments, a ritual bath, full body immersion in a mikvah, and if you're an uncircumcised male, you will also need to be circumcised. In the cases where the man has already been circumcised, creating a small drop of blood is sufficient. But take note of this: if you're an uncircumcised male, you will also need to be circumcised. So no male can become a Jew without being circumcised, regardless of your age. Isn't that quite a story? And finally, number 9. Children born prior to the end of conversion do not become Jews if their parent converts. Some authorities have stricter rules considering a child conceived before her conversion. Anyway, we're not going to bother with this. But your children, if you convert to Judaism, your children that you had before you converted, they don't become Jews. If you want to see somebody in modern times, a white person who became Jewish, all you have to do is look at Donald Trump's daughter. So here you can see in the Jerusalem Post, they had an article in 2019. Trump was baffled by Ivanka's conversion to Judaism, book claims. Kushner asserts that the Kushner family tried to break up Jared and Ivanka and refused to meet future daughter-in-law, Carly Kloss, for 6 years. So these Jews make it difficult to convert, and Ivanka is one of the few whites who've gone through all the trouble of converting to this stupid garbage religion. So now let me talk a bit about Cyril Ramaphosa and why I think he's a Jew. What I've shown you now is that becoming Jewish is not easy. It's a very difficult, tedious, miserable thing to become a Jew. The step downwards, you would say, and I'd agree with you. Anyhow, many years ago, this is probably anywhere between, my guess is sometime between 2010 and 2012. During that time, I think my Jewish friend, my best Jewish friend, the guy who visited me always here in South Africa, he'd been my Jewish friend for about 20, 22, maybe even 23 years. I think as he watched me doing my websites, I think with time he began to realize that I'm becoming more and more right-wing and more racist and starting to question Jews more and more. And I think he tried to do various things to kind of head me off and head me away from that. And among the things he tried to do, apart from just lying to me and just misdirecting me away from facts, other things that he tried to do, I think, when I think back to the things he told me, is that I think he tried to make me be more and more impressed by Jews. He tried to show off certain things. And those things just caused me to ask more questions. So he went and boasted about all kinds of things. And I think that he was trying to actually lure me towards the Jewish side with the hope that I would be impressed. So one day he said something to me. One day he said to me that a very important black man has just converted to Judaism. A very important black man. That's how he worded it. A very important black man has converted to Judaism. So I said to him, oh, okay. That's great for what that's worth. So I said to him, so who is he? No, I can't tell you, said my Jewish friend. And then on at least one or two more occasions, he mentioned this guy again. He said, you know, a very important black man has converted to Judaism. And every time he mentioned it, I asked him, I said to him, okay, so who is it? I said to him, just tell me. I'm not going to put it on my website. Just tell me. I just want to know. And he refused. So he tells me this black guy has converted to Judaism, but he doesn't tell me who. And initially, I couldn't imagine who it could be. I thought maybe it's the guy who runs the Reserve Bank, you know, which is basically the South African version of the Fed. So I thought, well, maybe it's the guy who runs the bank. Never did it occur to me that maybe when he says an important black guy, that this guy is going to become the president of South Africa. That didn't even occur to me. So that is where I started getting this notion that there is a black guy who's converted, and not many blacks convert to Judaism. Very few convert to Judaism. And who is this black guy? And now I'm going to show you some of the things that make me think that it is Ramaphosa. So take a look at this. This is the South African Jewish Report. And this is from, this article is from 2017. The president prior to Ramaphosa was Jacob Zuma, but the Jews hated Jacob Zuma. And Jacob Zuma, he's not Jewish, rest assured. He's a black guy, but the Jews hated this guy a lot. Anyway, take a look at this article from 2017. It turns out that Jacob Zuma has a Jewish grandson. So it says, President Jacob Zuma has a Jewish grandson who lives in the heart of Jewish Johannesburg with his single mom, who is a singer and works in the music industry. And there's your guy. So this is a rare instance of a black who's become Jewish. But these things are rare. These things are rare. This is the only other black that I know of who's actually become Jewish. I ran a story on my website, African Crisis, quite a while back. And I want to show you some of the links between Ramaphosa and the Jews. I posted this in September 2018. And it said, 7 pictures praising Jewish treason against whites, President Ramaphosa's close ties to the Jews, and the chief rabbi of South Africa. In other words, the top Jew. So you can see here, I had a headline from April 2009. Let me show you a few things about Ramaphosa. You see this woman who appears to be a white woman here? Her name is Reva Foreman. In the days of apartheid, she was the face of beauty in South Africa. She was a multimillionaire with beauty products. And you guessed it, she's Jewish. So we all looked on Reva Foreman as a very successful white woman. Very successful Jewish woman. Anyway, Reva Foreman has a project where she has a school for black children. No white children there, black children. And Ramaphosa also has links to this school. He also donates to this school. So Jews are busy helping black children, but you won't see Jews giving money to white children, children who are Afrikaans or orphans, nothing. They will help the blacks. So her thing was called Ma Africa Tikkun Times. Ma Africa is probably Mother Africa. And it says, a review of 2004, the school is now fully recognized by the government and a parents association has been established. And then it says, who are the patrons of the school? And it says, former President Nelson Mandela is the patron in chief. And then it lists other Jews, Gil Marcus, she's famous in banking, Raymond Ackerman, a Jew who owns a chain of supermarkets, massive chain of supermarkets. Ellerine, another rich Jew. I think Ellerine is furniture. Then a black person, Bridget Radebe. Then Cyril Ramaphosa. And then 2 other Jews, Lubna. Lubna are Jews in the furniture industry. So these are rich, famous Jews, and among them is Bridget Radebe and Cyril Ramaphosa. So Ramaphosa is one of only 3 blacks who are patrons to this project. Now we go and take a look at 2009, the Cape Jewish Chronicle. And you'll see on the front page, and you'll see the top donors dinner, guest speakers, Cyril Ramaphosa. So there's Ramaphosa with the Jews, invited to one of their events. And here's the Cape Jewish Chronicle. And you'll see mostly sort of whitish looking people. So here among all these quotes, white people, is one black man. One black man. Cyril Ramaphosa. And here is the invitation. Here they write about it. Cape Jewish Chronicle, a night of style and grace. And there's a sentence where it says, of special note are these sentences below. He, Ramaphosa, was warm in his appreciation of the part played by the Jewish community in the development of South Africa and in the support given by so many Jews in the struggle against the apartheid government. Okay, so he's praising Jewish treason against whites in the support given by so many Jews in the struggle against apartheid. So, you can take a look at all these rich white people everywhere. No blacks except for this guy, Cyril Ramaphosa. No other blacks around these wealthy, wealthy white scum. When I published this stuff on my websites, there was another guy, one of my readers, wrote a comment and he said to me that he knew some other Jew. I can't remember the name of the Jew. I'm not sure if it was a Jewish attorney. But he said he knew a Jew who in 2012 told him that Cyril Ramaphosa would be the president of South Africa. So this was one of my readers, and he said that another Jew had told him to his face in about 2012 that Ramaphosa would be the president of South Africa. In 2013, Ramaphosa and the chief rabbi of South Africa are getting together at a conference, and here's the invitation. It says, 2013, the years ahead. Join Chief Rabbi Warren Goldstein, and this is when Ramaphosa moves out of business into politics. And it says, and newly elected Deputy President of the African National Congress, Mr. Cyril Ramaphosa, as they talk about the opportunities and challenges facing South Africa. So this is when Ramaphosa was the Deputy President of the African National Congress. This was not yet Deputy President of the country. This is just Deputy President of the ruling party. And here's another article, February 26, 2013. And there you see the chief rabbi. And by the way, they're standing at a door, and at the door it says, Office of the Chief Rabbi of South Africa. Office of the Chief Rabbi of South Africa. This is the highest Jew. This Jew talks to presidents. Even before Ramaphosa, this Jew would invite President Zuma to come and speak to the Jews. One day my Jewish friend said to me, Jan, President Zuma is coming to visit us. Do you want me to ask him a question? I said, no, I don't have anything of interest that I want to ask him. But tell me afterwards how it went. And so then later he said, yes, you know, Zuma came and he addressed us and we asked him questions and he said this and we said that and blah, blah, blah. And I just didn't care. But here you can see these two. This is more than just calling on Zuma to come and talk to the Jews. These two are big buddies, as you'll discover. One of the problems for the Jews, though, is that the blacks of South Africa, due to them being sponsored by the Soviet Union and China, the Soviet Union was against Israel, because they were sponsoring Iraq, Iran, Syria, etc. And so for the blacks in South Africa were therefore automatically pushed towards being sympathetic to the Palestinians. So the blacks of South Africa hate Israel as a point. The blacks of South Africa hate Israel. And this is one place where the whole Jewish thing doesn't work so well with the blacks, is that the blacks hate Israel and they hate what Israel does to the Palestinians. So now it gets a bit dodgy having the chief rabbi and Ramaphosa busy with big business, because the blacks are against the rich and the blacks are against Israel. So it makes for quite a tough sell for the Jews. But these two guys, they're busy hobnobbing together. This story is from 2018, where it says Ramaphosa woos Jewish community seeking to allay land fears. And this is apparently on the basis of expropriation of land. But if he's Jewish, then in theory, he should not be taking land from other Jews. And I would imagine that there's a whole bunch of sneaky, dirty stuff going on there, that if he was to seize land, that he would see to it that he seizes it from non-Jews. I'm willing to bet you that's how this thing would actually work. I want to show you something else that's quite special, and you'll see how this applies to Ramaphosa. Here in 2019, there was a rabbi in America who blessed Donald Trump. And there's a video of him blessing Donald Trump. But this act of a rabbi blessing a president is rare. I've only been able to find examples of it being Donald Trump, the Prime Minister of Israel, Netanyahu, and you're going to be in for a surprise. So here in this news story from 2017, you can see the chief rabbi of Israel blesses Netanyahu. So the chief rabbi of Israel blessing Netanyahu. Rabbis do not bless many leaders. Take a look at this story. This was on a Jewish website back in 2018 when Ramaphosa became the new president of South Africa. And it says, South Africa's new president receives a rabbi's blessing. And here you can see the Jewish scumbag blessing this black communist white-hating president. And then there's a whole story about it. But here you can see, there's your Jewish rabbi, and there's this glowing black guy. So why is a rabbi blessing this guy? In the history of South Africa, I don't think in the history of South Africa that a rabbi has blessed any president of South Africa. And that would include Nelson Mandela. I don't know of any instance where a rabbi in South Africa has blessed any of South Africa's presidents, including any of the black presidents, only this guy. So here's another news story. It says, chief rabbi calls for prayers for Ramaphosa. This is in May 2019. And look at these two cozy guys. Okay? The chief rabbi of South Africa and this black guy. And look, it's almost as if his eyes are closed. This guy, I'm telling you, from his body language and from the way these Jews are treating him, this guy is one of them. He's seriously close to these people. There's more to this than meets the eye. An interesting test, by the way, would be to find out if his girlfriends tell you whether he's been circumcised. Now that would be an interesting story. But here is the whole story. Oh boy, these Jews and rabbis, and we're talking the chief rabbi of South Africa, so cozy with this guy. So cozy. Let me show you more of how cozy this black guy is with these white people. With all these white people, these rich, rich, influential white people. Look at them. This is from 2018. It's called Celebrating Mandela's Centenary with President Ramaphosa. So here are the Jews celebrating Nelson Mandela's centenary. Why are these white people celebrating Mandela? I'm telling you, man, these people are not on the side of whites. This is the only picture that I've come across where you can see multiple black guys among all these whites, all these white Jews. But that black guy is a cameraman. That guy might be some official, and there's another one far in the distance. And there's another one there. Otherwise, look at him. He's among all these Jewish boys, all these rich, super rich whites. Oh, and look at them holding hands and talking to each other, happy looking faces. These are people who are familiar with each other. Look at this. Busy shaking hands with some other Jewish guy. There are other Jews looking on. Everybody's very happy to be around him. Normal whites wouldn't really want to be around this guy. Look at these Jews. So cozy. So cozy. And by the way, that thing, South African Jewish Board of Deputies. South African Jewish Board of Deputies. That's the top organization controlling the Jews in South Africa. And South African Jewish Board of Deputies, they go after people. They make court cases against people. They shut people up. And look at all these white people who are so happy to be next to the president, hey? All these Jewish white people, hey? I know in America they don't call themselves white, but in South Africa they call themselves white. And look here. Here we've got yet another old Jew here. And look at these people, how happy they are to be with him. Look at all these smiling Jews. Look at that. Such a happy bunch of people to be hobnobbing with the president. And this is the event at which this happened. I mean, somebody is paying for this. I think the Jewish Board of Deputies was paying for this, I think. I'm not sure. But other companies may also have been part of this. So here you've got the rich and they are celebrating Nelson Mandela's centenary. The rich, the capitalists, are working and celebrating a communist. Really? Well, my friends, I'm telling you, these people, these evil rich people, these bastards are not on the side of whites, I tell you. And look here, on the stage, with their microphones, all of them busy chatting and hobnobbing and talking about the future. And here you can see all these Jews, all very friendly, and businesses have been funding this, etc., etc. And how is it that these people are buddies? And in all these proceedings, this black man is there. Is this one cozy little family or what? I'm going to show you some excerpts from the video from 2013. There is so much to show you, and I don't want to bore you with all the junk talk in between. But I have gone and edited a couple of pieces out of it, where you either hear the chief rabbi talking or you hear Ramaphosa talking. And listen to what they're saying. And listen to how comfortable these people are. The chief rabbi of South Africa is praising this guy to high heaven. There is no limit to the amount of praise he won't heap onto Ramaphosa. He says the most incredible things about Ramaphosa. And you'll see Ramaphosa is enjoying himself. And he's busy joking and talking. And he's quite happy. You'll see, he knows these people. He knows these people. And in the talks that he gives, he talks about visiting some of them and talking to them. And he tells jokes about them and so on. I just didn't go through all the different pieces so that you could see how totally familiar this black guy is with these Jews. He's in there, man. They know him. They support him to the hilt. He knows them. He feels totally comfortable among them. He doesn't have any sense of fear of these people. I'm telling you, this guy converted to Judaism. They're now one big happy family. And you'll see the praise that is heaped on him. Heaped on him in huge amounts by the chief rabbi. And in a later video, you're going to see how they talk about their personal friendships. The things they do together. How they phone each other. Let me tell you, these guys are so linked together, and that entire community knows it. Now, something you need to understand, if you're not aware of Jews, is that the Jews will know that he is a Jew. The Jews will know who all the other Jews are, even when the rest of the Goyim, when the secret is kept from the rest of the Goyim. And for those of you who don't know, the Goyim are the non-Jews. So the Jews will know who is a Jew. They'll know, this guy, he's one of us. And we're okay with him. And the mass media, when this guy became the president, the mass media went into a whole euphoria about him. They even invented a word for it. It was called Ramaphoria. And he's the only guy that they've gone totally ape over. He's the only guy that they've gone totally crazy over since Nelson Mandela. Now, let me tell you something. There are blood ties between these people. These people, you're looking at one incredibly close, happy family. And this black guy here, he is the latest addition to their family. And they go to unbelievable lengths to pump him up, to pump up his image you will be shocked at how much they go, how much they say about him, the praise that they heap on him. They can't heap more praise on him. It's impossible to praise him more. You'll see when you actually watch this little video. I've just sliced out a couple of minutes just so that you can listen to what the rabbi says and then listen to what he says. And that's not even everything. And this is the 2013 one. So this is long before he became the president. But I'll still show you a later one that's even more interesting.
We gathered here this evening with no crystal balls. I'm quite happy to admit that even as chief rabbi, I don't know everything, you know, perhaps almost everything, but I can't tell you what the future holds. So we're not here to predict the future, because as Jews, we don't predict the future. We seek to create it, because when you predict something, you're in a passive mode. You're wondering what's going to happen. What does the future hold in store? When you try to create, then we are looking to nurture and establish the kind of future that we want. And so that's really the framework for our discussion. What kind of future do we want in this country? And how can we as the South African Jewish community contribute to creating a better future for all South Africans? And I think the answer to this question lies in one crisp sentence that is contained in the Talmud. There was the appointment of, the Talmud relates the following incident which took place many years ago. There was an appointment of two brilliant young leaders to very high positions of authority. And they were being guided by their mentor, who was giving them advice for what is leadership about. And he sums up what leadership is about. And within that crisp little phrase is a framework for understanding what leadership is about, and it's in fact a philosophy for life, a philosophy for government, but not only for government, for business, for families, for individuals. What did he say to them? He said, don't think, kemedumim atem, it says in the original Hebrew, shesarara ani noten lachem, you think I'm giving you power by making these appointments. Avdut ani noten lachem, I'm not giving you power, I'm giving you service. And that is the essence of what real leadership is about. It's not about power, it's about service. And in that phrase and in that sentence is contained an entire philosophy of life. Because what is power versus service? Service is about others. Power is about self. Service is about altruism and power is about cynicism. Service is about giving versus taking. It's about contributing versus grabbing. It's about living for a higher cause rather than personal gratification. It's about sharing. But that legacy instead of continues when one is prepared to say, what can I do for the community? It's not only about myself, it's also about the community. And we also ask the question as a community, what can we do for our country, South Africa? And so I'm proud to say, as Stephen Kosoff mentioned in his opening remarks, that as a community we make an enormous contribution to the South African economy, contributing through the leadership of the various members of our congregation, billions to the South African economy, and employing hundreds of thousands, if not millions of people, and through outreach initiatives, humanitarian outreach initiatives, and in fields of medicine and law, we strive to see what we can do for our country, and that is our ethos as a community. But there's another aspect to this. We also, as a community, strive to see what we can do for Israel. And I think this is an important thing, and I wanted to use this opportunity to mention this, because it is important for our fellow South Africans, who are our comrades and whom we have grown up with in this country, to understand that in the heart of a Jew is also Israel, and that we have a deep connection to Israel. And we don't expect all South Africans to share the same affection and connection to Israel. But what we do expect from our government is balance. What we do expect from our government is a sense of proportionality. What we do expect from our government is to support both Israel and the Palestinians in their quest for peace. What we don't expect from our government is to take sides. We don't expect that Israel should be singled out in the way that it is. And that's part of our commitment to living for a higher cause. And then our Father in heaven will look down and shower us with all of the blessings that we need in this country to grow from strength to strength. God bless you and thank you. We are very honored and privileged that Mr. Cyril Ramaphosa, the newly elected Deputy President of the African National Congress, has agreed to be our guest of honor and guest speaker here this evening. Mr. Ramaphosa is a great South African leader who has done everything. When I say that there's some people who are specialists in one particular area in life. You have some people who have achieved a lot in politics and others who've achieved a lot in business and others who've achieved a lot in civil society. Mr. Ramaphosa has a biography which includes every achievement conceivable. He built, as we know, the National Union of Mine Workers and turned it into a powerhouse which was the birth of the labor movement here in South Africa. And then, as we know, was one of the key figures in the negotiations for the new South Africa, and in particular, the drafting and the negotiations for our constitution, which is one of the finest constitutions in the world, and we, as South Africans, would say, the finest constitution in the world. And so we have here a draft of a constitution. A draft of a constitution, a drafter of a Bill of Rights. These are all such historic things that individuals in history have done them in their own times. But to have them all in one person. And then Mr. Ramaphosa went into business and has achieved, thank God, wonderful and great success in the field of business. So he's seen it all. And that is what qualifies him to be a great leader of this great nation. Because you need someone who can see the perspective of the whole country. Not only from the perspective of the politicians, but understand from the inside the labor movement, to understand from the inside the titans of big business. You need that breadth to be able to do it. And we know as well, and I know from personal experience, that together with all of this, because sometimes when a person achieves so much in life, they can be quite a tough person. But Mr. Ramaphosa is a supreme gentleman. Gentle in his way and kind and dignified and inspires us all with the possibilities of what our country can be. And so we are very grateful that you have accepted our invitation. And without further ado, I'd like to call upon Mr. Ramaphosa to address us.
Thank you, Chief Rabbi. Various rabbis who are here. The rabbi has spoken a lot about service. The chief rabbi, that is. And a few years ago, I provided a very good service to him. You see, I didn't know that there's this process that gets underway when a chief rabbi is about to be appointed. So he came rushing to me and his brothers and said, "We've known you for years. Would you be able to write a reference? Because I'm being considered to be chief rabbi, and I wrote the most glorious things that you could say, think about." And he's a chief rabbi today. And I think he's doing fine. He really is doing fine. I've seen no cause to withdraw my reference. I've also been asked in the past to provide references for other priests in the Christian religion, so I've gladly done so. I don't know if anyone at the Vatican will want a reference from me. But you know, if they do, I'm free. I can write a reference.
Now that you've seen just a few of those excerpts from the 2013 talk, I didn't by any means even show you the full thing, but I just wanted you to see a little bit of it, especially the unbelievable praise that the chief rabbi of South Africa is heaping on this Ramaphosa back in 2013. You can see these guys are really tight, man. These people know each other well. And did you see how much Ramaphosa laughed when the chief rabbi was laying it on thick? Ramaphosa was laughing so much and hiding it. You can see these guys are on a mission. These two are working together. One particularly interesting thing about the chief rabbi's talk is, did you notice that he said Jews don't predict the future? Did you see? He went and said Jews are not into prophecy. They don't predict the future. Instead, they create the future. They like to create the future. They can't tell you what the future is, but they like to create it. Right out of the mouth of the chief rabbi, therefore suggesting that Jews are busy at work. Jews are busy driving things in the direction Jews wanted to go. So I found that very interesting. But we've got a more important video than that, which I really want to focus your attention on, which is much more recent. Now let me show you a full-length video. This is just short of an hour, and this I think is well worth watching in its entirety. This is Cyril Ramaphosa being invited to the oldest and probably most important South African synagogue. They say it's the first synagogue in South Africa, I think, in Cape Town. You'll see it's quite fancy. And Ramaphosa goes to the synagogue, and he's the guest speaker there. This was posted on YouTube on the 12th of September, 2018. So this was for the Jewish New Year. They say Rosh Hashanah. I assume that's also the same as Yom Kippur. So I suspect that this was done the day before or sometime along those lines. Remember that 9/11 also fell somewhere on like a Jewish New Year kind of a thing. Jewish New Year tends to fall in September, and all kinds of very weird things in the world and in world history happen in September. My Boer Nazi pal pointed this out to me years ago. He said, you'll be amazed at the many strange things that happen in September. And more often than not, September is when the Jewish New Year falls. There are many things that you need to watch for, but the most important thing to also watch during this is you will see yet again the chief rabbi of South Africa, the top rabbi in the country, the guy who is the leader of the Jews, okay? The chief rabbi introduces Ramaphosa again, just like in the 2013 video. He also praises him to high heaven, praises the ANC, praises the government. Among the things that you need to take careful note of is listen to the chief rabbi as well as Ramaphosa, and how negatively they talk about apartheid, which obviously means whites. They talk in nasty, nasty terms about apartheid. At a point, apartheid is even likened to the Jewish Holocaust of World War II. I'm not kidding you. They refer to apartheid as tyranny and all kinds of nasty things about apartheid. So whenever you hear apartheid, they're talking about the whites when the whites were ruling the country. So listen to the various tones and undertones of what they're saying. These are not the friends of whites, okay? Another thing that's very important in the case of Ramaphosa, watch him when you see him sitting and listening to or looking at the chief rabbi. Watch how attentive he is. Watch his body language throughout this thing at various points. Watch his body language. Look at his expression. Look at his seriousness. Look at his attentiveness. This guy is very close to these people. And this guy is very close to the chief rabbi of South Africa. They will also talk about things like state capture, etc., etc. And the chief rabbi talks about other things. But also take note, take special note of how familiar these two are with each other. Below the video on YouTube, a black guy, because you could see his surname, he was a black from South Africa. The first comment below the video by a black guy was, "Where's his kippah?" And the kippah is that stupid little Jewish hat that the Jews wear. So the first comment by a black guy is, "Where's his kippah?" The black guy is already seeing Ramaphosa as a Jew, literally. And observe the whole thing. Watch how they talk about their relationship with each other, how they know each other, how they call each other directly. This is not a thing of the two of them meeting now and then due to some official business. These two are on personal terms with each other. They've got each other's phone numbers on their mobile phones. They text each other or call each other directly. How many people in your life do you know who can communicate directly on a first-person basis with a president of any country? In whatever country you live, how many people do you know who have that kind of access? But watch Ramaphosa. And then Ramaphosa also gives a story about the Talmud. The Talmud is one of the nastier Jewish books. All the really hideous stuff is sitting in the Talmud. And Ramaphosa tells you that he's got a Torah, another one of their religious books. He's got a Torah in his study. But now he wants a Talmud. And you'll hear them even talking about the Talmud being in the president's office, I think, for the first time. I think that's in here. But just watch Ramaphosa, watch him, watch the chief rabbi. Both of them are going to talk and then see what you deduce from this. The Jews also sit there applauding at various points. Watch when the Jews applaud. And all these Jews, all these South African Jews, are pro-Israel, big time. So watch this, and after this, I will comment on all the things that have happened in there, things that I want to draw attention to. Also notice the flowery languages, the future promises, all the greatness that they wish for South Africa. I find it so ridiculous because to me, these people are not real South Africans, neither the Jews nor the blacks, in my view. And here they talk, oh, South Africa this, South Africa that, we are going to do this to South Africa. South Africa's going to be great. No, you idiots. South Africa was great. It's not going to be great. It's going downhill. So here's the speech. Listen to it. My comments follow at the end of this.
I'm honored and delighted to welcome His Excellency, President Cyril Ramaphosa, to the Garden Synagogue and into the heart of our community. Mr. President, your election as leader of the ANC and your elevation to President of the Republic of South Africa is a great victory for freedom and democracy and the hope for a brighter future for us all. Your victory is a rejection of the ghastly attempted state capture for the personal enrichment of a select few. And I use the word attempted because South African society rose up to defend our freedom and the integrity of our institutions. The very first gift that God gave the Jewish people at the birth of our nation was the gift of freedom when he liberated us from Egypt. Freedom is the most important blessing. It is the source of all our other blessings. When a society is truly free, like South Africa, it is ultimately able to overcome great challenges. With freedom, light can overcome darkness and good can overcome evil. We South Africans used our freedom to fight state capture. An independent judiciary held those in power accountable. The media fearlessly and bravely uncovered corruption, exposing it to the light of public opinion, and relentlessly pursued its perpetrators. Feisty opposition parties and a resilient civil society resisted. Mr. President, we commend you for bravely and resolutely leading the fight against corruption. And heralding a new era for integrity for South Africa. Those who for too long held our country to ransom are now pursued by the law through judicial inquiries, through prosecution and investigation, so that they too will be held accountable. Friends, I want to start by telling you that we have a president who is a true mensch. Mr. President, the Yiddish word mensch. Let me give you an example of what I mean. I'd been up and down with the president to set a time to meet with him. And the night before I was due to travel to a family simcha, I got a personal SMS from the president to ask if we could meet the very next day, which would mean disappointing my family. Nevertheless, I messaged him back immediately to say that I was looking to change my flights and that I'd confirm with him as soon as I'd managed to do so. He messaged me that I should not change my plans. I responded that I would like to do so anyway. And then I got such a fright. He called me personally on my cell phone to say that he insists, those were his words, that I must go ahead with my plans and that he would see me the following week instead. He didn't want to inconvenience me to any extent. I remember saying to him, and this on the phone, I said to him, "But Mr. President, when the president calls, you go." To which he said, "Don't worry," and he would meet with me when I was back in Johannesburg the following week. I was so moved by his humility and his personal call. It is a small example, but it says a lot about our president. We did get to meet soon after I returned, and I brought with me a volume of the Talmud so that we could learn something together. Possibly the first time the Talmud made an appearance in a presidential meeting. I came over to sit next to the president, and we looked inside the Talmud together and looked at a passage which refers to the verse in the Torah which says, "And you shall surely heal." The Talmud says from this verse we learn that the doctor was given permission to heal. Why should a doctor need permission to heal? Surely healing is a mitzvah. The commentators explain that one would have thought that perhaps in healing, a doctor is undoing the will of God. Because if God wanted the person to be well, they would be. The Talmud gives us a radical new idea. We are called upon to be partners with God in creation. The doctor works as God's partner to heal the sick. Because there is pain and human suffering in the world, our mission is to collaborate in partnership with God to make this world into a better place. Rosh Hashanah marks the anniversary of the creation of the world. The idea of being God's partners in creation touches on the very essence of the universe and defines our relationship with God in the most radical way. The book of Genesis describes how God said to a world filled with darkness and chaos and void, "Let there be light." And so too we are called upon to confront the darkness and chaos in this world and to bring light to it. In the same way that God created a world in which human beings could live, so too are we called upon to exercise our creativity and ingenuity to create a world where human civilization and the human spirit can thrive in dignity. Mr. President, we all have a sacred mission to be God's partners in nurturing and building and creating a great country together. It is our sacred task and holy mission. We are all partners with God, and that makes us partners with each other. South Africa faces a legacy of human suffering, inflicted by centuries of colonialism and apartheid, and we must partner with God to build a better country for all, to alleviate poverty, to grow the economy, to ease all forms of human suffering, and to ensure that all have the dignity of housing, education, healthcare, safety, and a job. Our partnership is about creating an environment in which the divine soul within all can flourish and thrive, unleashing the awesome genius, creativity, and the full potential of every South African. Mr. President, on this occasion, on this Rosh Hashanah of 5779, on behalf of the South African Jewish community, I would like to pledge our partnership with you in building this country. Mr. President, our sleeves are rolled up, and we are ready to work with you. We are here for South Africa, and we are all partners with God and with each other. We as a community have breadth and depth of talent and resources and have already contributed so much to the ongoing development of South Africa. But today we commit to continue the partnership and deepen and broaden it in everything we do. Partnership is how we can turn South Africa around. And this partnership has so much going for it. We South Africans are resourceful, tenacious, warm, good people with a track record of overcoming seemingly insurmountable odds, a history of miraculous turnarounds, and a capacity to solve conflicts peacefully. South Africa has a world-class infrastructure, abundant minerals and other resources, and sophisticated financial, legal, and telecommunication sectors. Much progress has been made over the years. Since 1994, the government has provided housing, electricity, and running water to millions. The South African economy is 4 times bigger in nominal terms than it was in 1994, and double its size since then in real terms. The proportion of people in the LSM 1 to 4 category, which is the lowest income category, has halved since 1994, and the black middle class today is bigger than the white population. But with all these blessings, there comes great challenge. The challenge of an economy tilting towards recession, high unemployment, especially among youth, the challenge of too many people mired in poverty and deprivation. As the Jewish community, we are ready to partner with you on these challenges. We have members of our community who are involved in business, brave entrepreneurs who are helping to create jobs for our society. Growing our economy is crucial for the future well-being of all South Africans. We are proud to have many members of our community who contribute to the great fields of human endeavor, medicine, law, politics, science, technology, and culture. One thing that never ceases to amaze me is the sheer number of humanitarian efforts led by members of the Jewish community. Our contribution to growing the economy and creating jobs and to initiating humanitarian outreach projects is completely disproportionate to our numbers. Our destiny as a community is intertwined with all South Africans. So many of our members of our community have borne the brunt of the slow South African economy and are under tremendous financial pressure. As your partners, Mr. President, we turn to you to direct and lead the South African economy to a new cycle of growth, which we all so desperately need. We will play our role, Mr. President, but all South Africans need an environment and policies which will catalyze robust and sustained economic growth. Mr. President, as our trusted leader and partner, we have a duty to let you know that we also love and cherish the State of Israel. It is part of who we are. Israel is the land that God promised to our forefathers, Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. And since Joshua entered the land with our ancestors about 3,300 years ago, there has been an unbroken Jewish presence in the land until today. 3 times a day in our prayers, we mention the city of Jerusalem, and in our grace after meals, and at every wedding, and at every funeral. Mr. President, we feel privileged that in our day we have seen the reestablishment of Jewish sovereignty in the land of Israel. It is the fulfillment of biblical promises, and it is also crucial to the survival of the Jewish people in the world. During the dark days of the Holocaust, the Jews of Europe had nowhere to run and nowhere to turn. Israel is our spiritual heritage, our emotional identity, and our historic destiny. We cannot be separated from it. Mr. President, if I may say, our opposition to the threatened downgrade of the South African embassy in Israel is not based only on our deep relationship with Israel, but on our sincere conviction in the justice of her cause. To accuse Israel of apartheid is a libelous defamation of the Jewish state and an insult to the victims of the real apartheid. It is also based on the deep conviction that it is in South Africa's best interests to form strong ties with the only free democratic country in the entire Middle East, and that it is in South Africa's interest to partner with the robust economy and technology of Israel to create jobs here and alleviate suffering. And it is indeed in the interests of peace and also of Palestinian national aspirations for South Africa to retain an involvement and a relevance. To downgrade is to become irrelevant, and it is to give up on the South African dream of dialogue and discussion. And so, Mr. President, I take this opportunity to say on behalf of the South African Jewish community that we are loyal partners in the noble and holy endeavor to uplift and transform and renew and reinvigorate South Africa, a precious country which has given us all so much. Our mission is to be God's partners in this sacred task. It is the greatest compliment of all that God wants us to be not only his servants, but his partners. That God, who is the King of all kings, immortal and all-powerful, chose us, mere mortals of flesh and blood, to be his partners. It is a compliment which fills us with optimism, because being God's partners in the world means that there is also a promise of a better tomorrow, a promise of creating a better world together, a better country together. To live as God's partners means to live a life of boldness and innovation, of courage and tenacity. It is to live with optimism, to live with a belief that we have within our grasp the power to create a better country today. Mr. President, we are ready to partner with you and with our fellow South Africans in the march towards the truly great South Africa of the future. May God bless your holy endeavors with abundant success for the sake of a beloved country that has cried for too long. May God bless you, Mr. President, and all of us and all South Africans with a good and a sweet year. Shana Tova Umetuka. Mr. President, it is an honor to invite you to address us.
Chief Rabbi Dr. Warren Goldstein, distinguished guests, well, I shouldn't say your guests because this is your home. Shalom. Now, it's a real honor and a privilege to have been invited to come and be part of this special occasion in the Hebrew calendar, the celebration of the Jewish New Year, Rosh Hashanah. Now, the chief rabbi is absolutely right. He came to my home holding a book in his hand. A beautiful book it was. And I thought that he had come to give me a gift of a book. And I looked at it with great excitement. And then he told me that this is the Talmud. My excitement reached high levels because I have a copy of the Torah in my study, but I don't have a copy of the Talmud. Now, he opened it. We shared a verse that he spoke about. But then he left with the Talmud. And I said to myself, what type of a chief rabbi is this? So, chief rabbi, you owe me a book. I embrace this moment, this celebration, as part of our nation's rich tapestry of religious, cultural, and linguistic diversity. It's a real pleasure to be here and to glow in your presence, in the presence of this wonderful building, which the chief rabbi told me was one of the first to be constructed in South Africa, in Cape Town. We should all be proud of this celebration and that it is taking place in conditions of peace, of tolerance, and respect for one another in a South Africa that has worked very hard to overcome perhaps what many have regarded as the most intractable problem ever in the world, racism, and apartheid racism for that. Occasions like this remind us as South Africans of the value of diversity and should inspire us to work actively to ensure that all of us truly belong to this beautiful country that we live in. Our Constitution, through its Bill of Rights, explicitly provides for the protection of cultural and religious rights. People who live in countries where they do not enjoy religious rights, when they come here, often say, "You are truly fortunate as South Africans to live in a country, in a democracy that respects the religious rights of all its citizens." We are truly fortunate. Within the framework of this most outstanding, world-renowned constitution, we must remain vigilant against all forms of intolerance, abuse, as well as discrimination. We must excise from our society any manifestation of racism, of any manifestation of sexism, of any manifestation of anti-Semitism. We must respond to anti-Semitism with the same resolve as we respond to any act or statement that seeks to demean any faith, any race, gender, or ethnic group. This celebration presents us with an opportunity to express appreciation for the significant contribution that has been made by the Jewish community to the development of our society. The importance attached by the Jewish community to family, to community life, to faith, to education, to hard work, as well as to being people of the book and to perseverance is admired by many South Africans, and I could say by most South Africans. The contribution of the Jewish community to our society predates the advent of democracy. Our history is punctuated with several examples, both celebrated and unknown, of people of Jewish background who fought against injustice and who fought against the apartheid system. In my own movement, there have been outstanding giants of our struggle who participated with great courage and commitment, together with the oppressed majority in our country, against the apartheid system. And we continue to honor them. We continue to uphold their names and their memories deeply embedded in the hearts and the minds of our people. Some of them even chose to be buried in townships amongst the people who they struggled with, amongst the people they led, and amongst the people who they knew loved them so dearly. That is the extent of how Jewish people have embedded themselves into the fabric of South African life and became part and parcel of it. Even in struggle, even in difficult times, they led from the front, and many of them gave their own lives, people like Ruth Vest. Today, Jewish South Africans continue to play vital roles in public institutions, in business, civil society at large, in the arts, in culture, in technology, as the chief rabbi said, in medicine, in the academia, in law, and many other areas, across a broad spectrum of human endeavor. If you want to find Jewish people, you will find them in every crevice of South African life. South Africa's cultural and religious diversity is one of our enviable attributes that gives us a unique opportunity to learn from one another and to stand by one another and to be united as a nation as we forge ahead amongst the very difficulties that we may face from time to time. It is important that we share ideas, that we share insights in all areas of human activity, from business, finance, to arts and culture, from science, to medicine, to politics, as well as human rights. The better future that we all seek depends on our collective ability as South Africans, working with partners abroad to put the nation to work to achieve decent employment for all our people. Our national call to action today is jobs, jobs, and jobs, and jobs. As government, we are hard at work to create an environment in which enterprise can thrive and provide opportunities to the millions of South Africans who are daily confronted by the indignity and the hardship of unemployment and of poverty. We have embarked on an ambitious but necessary program to stimulate both domestic and international investment of $100 billion over the next 5 years. The investment is necessary if we are to expand our productive capacity as a country and generate faster and inclusive growth. Part of this journey is the cultivation of a new generation of entrepreneurial South Africans who are able to establish businesses for themselves and employment for others. Now, the Jewish community is ideally placed to contribute to this effort because many high-standing entrepreneurs in our country who are Jewish have contributed immensely to the creation of great companies in our country. Now, our government is prepared to continue working with the business sector and also with Jewish business leaders in all ways. We want to do so because it is when we strike a partnership between business and government, and yes, together with labor and communities, that we are able to take our country forward together. And in fact, many of the great successes that we have arrived at have been arrived at because we've been able to forge a wonderful partnership with business and government, labor and community. We have taken significant measures to end the scourge of corruption, which steals from the poor and enriches a few. So the chief rabbi is right. The chief rabbi is right in outlining some of the steps that we are taking. The State Capture Commission is the spearhead of a range of interventions that will include the participation of a number of government agencies that we want to strengthen, to probe, and also to make investigations to get to the depth of criminality that has impoverished our society and economy, and that, having done so, we should be able to act against those who are responsible, and that there must be accountability for those who have done wrong against the people of South Africa. We must pledge as a nation that we will never allow our ethical and economic fiber to be undermined by the scale of corruption that we've seen and also malfeasance. We want South Africa to be a country where the rule of law is observed, where there is accountability, where there is also consequence management of anyone who does things wrong against our people. We do this and we say this because we want to build a nation that is based on sound values, a nation where there is integrity, and a nation that is inspired by honest leadership. And in this regard, we stand on the shoulders of iconic leaders of our country who have gone before us, who were ethical, who had integrity, who were truthful, who were honest, and who were committed to nothing else but serving the people of South Africa. I talk of leaders like Nelson Mandela, whose centenary we are celebrating this year, Walter Sisulu, Joe Slovo, Ahmed Kathrada, many others who have come before us and showed us exactly what exemplary, ethical, and honest leadership was all about. We are working with greater purpose also to correct the injustices of the past with a view of unlocking the potential of our people. Apartheid colonialism had a devastating impact on the majority of people in our country, And all of us are enjoined to work together to undo the legacy that we reaped. And many people say, well, that was 25 years ago almost. You must get on with life. In part, that is true. But we shall never forget what apartheid did to our people. Like, we should never forget what the Holocaust meant to Jewish people in the history of the world. As we work fervently to undo the injustices of the past, we invite all South Africans to actively participate in this wonderful debate that is unfolding in our country on an issue which means so much to the majority of South Africans, the land question. The land reform debate is raging all around us. And in a number of cases, it has inspired a lot of hope amongst the majority of South Africans who were deprived of their land many years ago from colonialism and apartheid. But it has also instilled a lot of fear amongst a number of South Africans who are current owners of property. We want to say that we would like the land reform process to unfold within the framework of our constitution and to be underpinned by the rule of law, and that it should be implemented in ways that will broaden economic opportunity, but more importantly, it should be implemented in a way to promote social cohesion amongst all South Africans. I've often said that this may seem like an intractable problem, but we have faced intractable problems before, and bringing the end to apartheid was one such intractable problem. The entire world thought that South Africa was going to descend into civil war and that we will be slaughtering one another. We were able, with great leadership, to navigate our way around bringing an end to the nightmare of apartheid. I've often said, and I said it yesterday in the National Council of Provinces, that we have a DNA within us. We've got an inbuilt DNA of being able to resolve intractable problems. And it is this DNA that we should trust and rely on to be able to enable us to resolve what may seem like an intractable problem. And yesterday I gave the example that, you know, many other nations around the world, in order to solve their own problems, have descended into war, into bloodshed, which has consumed the lives of many, many people, in some cases running into millions of people. In order to bring about a change in the political architecture of their country, in order to bring about a sea change in the way that their country was run. And I gave an example of how in the United States in 1776, in their quest to be independent from their colonial master, the United Kingdom, they went to war, fought against each other, and many people were killed. And finally, they were able to achieve a settlement which was a sea change to the way their country was run. Similarly, in 1789, many of us will remember, there was what was called the French Revolution, where they were seeking to achieve freedom, equality, and liberty. The guillotine in Paris killed so many people. They were not able to solve that problem. And as a result, many people were killed. And thereafter, they had a sea change, the way in which their country was run. In 1917, in Russia, there was the Russian Revolution, which consumed many lives. In 1949, in China, many people died as well. As China sought to bring about a new change in the way the country was governed and the way people lived. In 1994, we were able to have our own revolution, but it was a negotiated revolution, which brought about a sea change in the way South Africa was governed, the way we lived, and the way we related to each other. Now, that established a way in which we could solve problems by talking, by collaborating, by negotiating amongst ourselves. And we found a truly South African solution that crafted the constitution that we have today. What many people had dismissed as a hopeless case of our inability to find a solution, we disappointed them or we astounded them by finding each other and finding a solution to the apartheid nightmare. And we settled. Similarly, another matter which was an issue that reared its head during the negotiations, the land question, came up. And so you may remember, there were four issues that were particularly difficult and problematic during our negotiations process. The first was the issue of language. The second was the issue of education. The third was the issue of the right to strike by workers, and the fourth was the land question. We were able to find solutions for all of them. But the land question, because it was a historic wound, has continued to fester, and this festering wound now needs further attention. It needs to be dressed up, it needs to be sutured, and it needs to be healed permanently. And it is in this regard that we say we will find a solution to this, because we have an DNA built into our system to find solutions to the most intractable and difficult problems. And this is one of those that I have no doubt in my mind we are going to find a solution for, because we are South Africans. Because we are people who were well blessed with the gift of having a Nelson Mandela amongst us, who taught us that the only way to resolve problems is collaboration as well as reconciliation. Parliament currently is busy with this process, and this is where the voices of our people must be heard, and where their aspirations must be given effect to. Through the parliamentary process, we are certain that we will arrive at a solution that provides clarity and certainty that is sought by landless South Africans, landowners, and investors alike. This is a time for us to focus on the prospect of a more an equal society, one that is more united and more productive. And this provides us with an opportunity where, through the sharing of the land, as the Freedom Charter said, that the land shall be shared amongst those who work it, we can make it a reality. a reality in the sense that we can give effect to the deep quest that many South Africans who do not have land have, and also give assurance to those who have land and say, let us find one another and find a solution to this problem. As it is now, many landowners in South Africa are coming forward and say, yes, we are prepared to participate in a dialogue. We are prepared to participate in this project so that we can solve this matter once and for all. And they are coming forward with proposals. And this is precisely what this whole debate and process was meant to evoke. And it is bringing forth wonderful suggestions which I'm sure will be taken forward to find a solution. As we grapple with our own challenges, we must continue to play as South Africans. Yes, Chief Rabbi, we must continue to play a constructive role in the quest for peace in the Middle East. This we should do as South Africans. We are clear in our support for the achievement of a Palestinian state alongside the right of the state of Israel to exist in peace and security with its neighbors. This for us is important. We owe the success of our own struggle against apartheid tyranny and our peaceful emergence as a democracy to our determination to find one another as South Africans and to a sustained program of international solidarity. It remains our hope as South Africa that the peoples of Palestine and Israel will work with each other and with the international community to achieve lasting peace, stability, and prosperity. This is what we hope for. And so that it is known, South Africa stands ready to help and participate in a peace process in that part of the world. Yes, Chief Rabbi, the decision that was taken by the governing party about the embassy status is a decision that I'm sure has disturbed many Jewish people in our country. Yes, it is a conference decision. And what I would like to say, let us continue engaging. Let us not walk away from each other. Let us continue engaging and talk even as South Africans and see what role we can jointly play in helping to bring about peace in the Middle East. We must do so because we are all peace-loving people. And what binds us together here is our South African-ness. And that is what should come first to us, that we are South Africans. And yes, you all who are seated here have an affinity and a commitment and a loyalty and a continued bond with the state of Israel. That, as South Africans, we recognize, we acknowledge, and we applaud you for that, because that is your destiny, but you are South Africans as well at the same time. That is what we must recognize. We must therefore, as we demonstrate our willingness to play this supportive role of supporting the peace process in the Middle East, particularly between Israel and Palestine, we must be concerned about the resurgence of confrontation and conflict in the region and about the grave humanitarian cost of further intransigence. We must be equally appalled by the violation of the rights of any person, whether they are Palestinian or Israeli, whether they are Muslim, Jewish or Christian. That, as South Africans, should concern us. We must recognize equally the inalienable right of everyone to self-determination and freedom. We still believe that, as was the case with the end of apartheid, peace in the Middle East will be achieved. I still believe that it is possible, and that peace will shine forever as a beacon of hope of humanity, or for humanity. This, I fervently believe, is a hope that all of us should harbor. Many people right now say it's a lost cause, it is an intractable problem. And similarly, many did say the apartheid problem was a lost cause and an intractable one, but we did find solutions for it. So I say, as South Africans, we should continue being hopeful about this. Now, the other important challenge that we face as South Africans is the current status of our own economy. An economy that has shown levels of low growth, and in fact, as they say now, we are in a technical recession. The status of our economy is not pleasing to all of us. And it is in this regard that the government has decided that we will need to take some steps that will inject some more life into the economy of our country, which we should be announcing shortly. But at the same time, what we are focusing on is how we can make South Africa an investable country, how we can address the issues of policy uncertainty, policy consistency, so that we can continue creating a good environment for our economy to grow. And in this regard, Chief Rabbi, we are willing, prepared, and able to work with business leaders from the Jewish community to work together so that we can find ways of creating jobs. I was enormously heartened during our discussions a few weeks ago when you said the Jewish community, through its business leaders, are prepared to come forward to put a number of proposals on the table on how we can further create jobs in our country. That was music in my ears. And I hope, Chief Rabbi, you keep singing like that when you come to see me, because that's precisely the message that I want to hear. The Chief Rabbi has promised that he and I will continue to meet, and he will come with the Talmud, and we will be able to share. Now, I want to advise him that when he next comes, he must come with 2 copies of the Talmud, not 1, because I want to keep the other one. The Chief Rabbi filled me with a great deal of hope when he spoke fervently about the commitment of the Jewish community, the commitment of Jewish business leaders to work with all of us. Now, I felt really lifted. My spirits were lifted in knowing that, yes, indeed, which I never doubted, but when he said it, he reconfirmed it, that business leaders in the Jewish community want to work with government. They want to get closer to government and work with us so that we can find ways of navigating our way through the maze of low growth or an economy that is now in technical recession. This we welcome because there's a great deal of wisdom amongst a number of Jewish business leaders and Jewish people, which we would like to mine so that we can improve the returns for our own economy. And this, we don't say lightly, because at difficult times, even during Nelson Mandela's days, he was able to have conversations with a number of leaders, and they were able to come forward with good advice. And this time, I would like to do the same as well. As you gather together for prayer and celebration at this special time of year, I encourage you to do so with hope for a better South Africa. Hope inspired not just by words, be it the chief rabbi's words or my own words, but inspired by what we have already achieved. We have already achieved a great deal, and the chief rabbi touched on it. Recently, the Institute of Race Relations released a document which I think they dubbed The Reason to Hope. Reason to Hope. Because they say they released it because as South Africans we have tended to beat ourselves into the ground. We have tended to fill our minds with negativity, thinking that we have failed, thinking that we live in a country that is failing, thinking that nothing is working and we are forever moving backwards. And they say they were bucking the trend that is propagated in the media, in various circles in the country. And they said the statistics, empirical evidence, disputes this notion that we are failing, we have failed. And they say if you look very closely at the statistics that are available, and they are the biggest research body in the country in terms of researching our life as South Africans, and they say evidence shows that we have achieved a great deal in the 25 years of our democracy. That is what they say. And they say possibly we are so close to the rock face that we have missed looking at the bigger picture. And they say, if you look at our economy, and the chief rabbi referred to it, has grown four times since 1994. But if you look at working people in our country, 1994 there were 8 million people who were employed. Today there are 16 million people who are employed in our economy. Reason that so many people who are unemployed is because our growth has failed to keep up with the growth in our population. Our population has exploded and we have not been able to provide jobs for the newcomers. But we have been creating jobs consistently on an ongoing basis. Now, that, they say, is reason to be hopeful, because it shows that we have not been moving backwards. We have lifted a lot of people out of poverty. Today, yes, we may seem like a welfare state by providing grants and assistance to 17 million people. Not many countries do so on the African continent. Why are we doing it? We are doing it to curb the ravages of poverty, to give life and dignity to the majority of South Africans is what is enabling many of our people to have a life and to feel hopeful. Is there reason for us to feel hopeful? Yes. I'd like to suggest that there is reason that we should feel hopeful. What we are going through now is just a dark patch. What we are doing currently, repositioning our state-owned enterprises that play such a critical role in the economy of our country, must give us hope that we are going into our state-owned enterprises, rooting out corrupt elements, repositioning those state-owned enterprises, and positioning them for a better tomorrow. That is what we should be grateful for, that we are going to the root of corruption. We are going to the places where those who have been involved in malpractices have been, and rooting them out. Root, branch, and everything, they are getting out. So I want to end by saying that let's continue to be hopeful. Let us continue to know that a brighter future awaits us, because we are putting everything in place. From a policy point of view, we are addressing the concerns and issues that have been raised by potential investors. From an effectiveness point of view of making government work better, we are addressing that as we speak. Local government, as you've all seen with the Auditor General's report, has been a mess. We are dealing with that level of dysfunctionality. We are dealing with service delivery issues. The good thing is that we know where the problems are. And as we go on, we also know where the skeletons are. We also know where the bodies have been buried. And we are now going right into every closet, cleaning up, repositioning South Africa. I can assure you that South Africa in the next while is going to be in a far better position, much better position, so that what has happened in the recent past will become a distant memory, and its shadow will have receded as we move forward to be the South Africa of Nelson Mandela's dreams, to be the South Africa which will achieve the aspirations that all of us want to see achieved. We owe it to those who came before us, especially Nelson Mandela, to correct everything that has gone wrong in our country and to reposition South Africa and make South Africa work. And I am here to work as hard as I can as your president to make this country work. Join me in doing so. Thank you very much.
Now that you've seen that video, I just want to add points of my own about the stuff that was said. I must tell you, there were many parts of this thing where the chief rabbi of South Africa was carrying on and on and on, and he was saying all his stuff, and I must tell you, I could have puked. Almost every second sentence, I felt like throwing up, I tell you. And I listened to this junk. So anyway, let me just make a few points, especially for people overseas, because you may not appreciate some of the sneaky Jew stuff that is in this discussion here. So we'll begin with the chief rabbi. When the chief rabbi was talking about the thing called state capture, what he was referring to was the previous president, President Zuma. Zuma is a Zulu, he's a communist, but he's a communist who survived in an organization that's actually dominated by another tribe, the Khoza. The African National Congress, which rules South Africa, is mostly Khoza's who became communists. So Zuma was a rare Zulu who became a communist. And he's done very well in the organization. And clearly, he understands a whole bunch of stuff for him to be able to survive in a predominantly Khoza organization. But as a Zulu, He's also got some things that he wanted to do, and I think he was quite a determined communist. But he actually struck a deal with Indians. And that's also quite strange because Zulus in 1949 were trying to kill Indians. The Zulus went to genocide the Indians in 1949, and the whites came and killed the Zulus. That's a whole other story. That's a genocide that whites stopped, which was something the Indians should be grateful for, but instead the Indians knifed the whites in the back. So the whites actually saved them from physical annihilation back in 1949. They should have left the Zulus to do their thing, really. But you'll never hear a word of praise. You'll never hear a word of praise for the fact that the whites went and shot Zulus and saved the Indians from imminent genocide, which had just begun. You'll never hear this mentioned in the history books or anything. Not a word of it. Not a word of it. And the white man's always the devil. But the white man has stopped many fights between tribes and between peoples. The white man's done many, many things for which he got zero recognition. Anyway, so it is quite strange that this Zulu, Zuma, struck a deal with Indians who were super rich, and these Indians were financing him. So Zuma actually got out from under the Jews, and he had his own finance in the form of these sneaky Indians. So everybody else in the ANC is being financed by the sneaky Jews, but Zuma was financed by the sneaky Indians. And guess what? When your side is not being financed by the Jews, then the Jews ran around screaming, oh, this is a problem, this is a problem. So they go on and on about Zuma's plan for state capture, his plan to totally take over the South African government. And I must tell you, I could have thrown up when the chief rabbi was saying, oh, the media rose to the occasion, and the media and people of principles fought against this, and South Africa was saved. Oh, what a crock of shit that was. This was simply the Jews and their Shabbos Goyim who were fighting against Zuma because Zuma was not being financed and having his strings pulled by them. So when somebody else pulls the strings, the Jews and the Shabbos Goys are running around and they're busy crying, oh, it's state capture, it's state capture. But when they've got their fingers in the pie, and they might even have the president as one of them, and they're busy dipping their fingers into the pie and capturing the state, then suddenly, no, there's no problem at all. South Africa's running the way it should. So I just want to make the point that when you hear all this endless, overblown nonsense about the state capture of Zuma, forget about it. Everybody's busy with state capture. Everybody is crooked. And it's only a case of if the guys who aren't financing the newspapers are doing it, then the newspapers talk about it. But that's all it is. Oh, these people, oh God, I tell you, I could just throw up at the thought of it. Oh, these people who are so principled and the media rose to the occasion. Oh God, I'm telling you, it just makes me want to puke. Such a crock of shit that is. Then when I heard him talk about how he's against corruption, oh goodness. Ramaphosa may be the most corrupt of the whole lot who's ever been in the presidency. He's also the richest of everybody who's been in the presidency. You might actually have the most corrupt black guy of the other corrupt black guys in charge. And the Jews are saying, no, this is so great, he's so awesome, he's so fantastic, he's so truthful. Meanwhile, you could have the biggest crook is now in power. And the Jews are like, no, he's so fantastic. Oh, what a lot of nonsense. And then when the chief rabbi went on to praise Ramaphosa as a true mensch. Mensch is just some more German that the Jews have stolen from their time in Germany. Yiddish contains a lot of German in it. So a mensch is probably just person, but the Jews now have got their own special meaning for it. It's like a wonderful person. This is all stuff from their time in Germany. And the Germans don't want to remember it. But, you know, here are these Jews. Oh, you know, ancient people. Meanwhile, they're speaking German. They're speaking in their little funny language that's mostly stolen from German. So I went and checked. Yes, this is Yiddish, and it means a good person. And then the Jews have got a word called unmensch, and that's the opposite. Oh, God. Anyway, let's move on. The other thing about the chief rabbi was when he was discussing his SMSs, his text messages to Ramaphosa and their direct communications on mobile phone to each other, hey? So that shows you these guys are close, hey? You've got two people busy with a game here. These guys know each other way too well. Then the chief rabbi goes on about centuries of colonialism and apartheid. Centuries of colonialism and apartheid and the damage that it did to South Africa. Okay? All that. Anti-white. Telling you that when whites are in charge, it's bad, it's evil, but now it's good. The undertones of these talks by the two of them, it should be clear, the common enemy is the white man. And all that praise for black rule, and then carrying on with talking about, oh, the progress made in South Africa under black rule, it's gone so far forward. Oh, please. Then one thing that comes up in all these times when Ramaphosa and the rabbi are together, the chief rabbi always raises the issue of Israel. You see, the blacks in South Africa, and this is where it gets funny, the blacks in South Africa hate the Israelis. They hate them. The operative word is hate for Israel. It's what the black South Africans do. And it comes from their time when they were hobnobbing with the Cubans and the Russians, because the Russians were siding with the enemies of Israel, which is another irony because, you know, Jews helped to create the Soviet Union. Then Jews left the Soviet Union and went to Israel and then turned onto America's side. So that left some bad blood there. And the Russians and their former communist allies, they've stuck with the Palestinians all the way. They financed Iraq, Iran, Syria, the Palestinians, etc. And the blacks of South Africa moved in those communist circles in the time of the Warsaw Pact and all that, when Eastern Europe was under Soviet rule. So the blacks of South Africa hate Israel. They hate it. And now you'll see that the chief rabbi and Ramaphosa now have to try and change the mode of talking about this, because it turns out that the African National Congress, the ruling party, they decided to totally shut down the South African embassy in Israel. They downgraded it massively, so it's not a proper embassy anymore. It's a real kick in the teeth for the Jews and for Israel. So now these Jews with their Jew buddy Ramaphosa, they now have to try and get the blacks to chill on the stresses and hatreds of Israel. And this puts Ramaphosa in a spot. And Ramaphosa now has to play a very careful game. With this topic, because the blacks as a whole hate the Jews. They hate them. And notice how the Jews are saying, oh, well, you know, we are so close to Israel. We love Israel. So there you hear the South African dual citizenship types already telling you, well, you know, we're South Africans, but we also have this love of Israel. Yeah, yeah. So there you got the dual citizenship Jewish angle from South Africa. Israel's so close to us. And lots of these Jews in the time of apartheid, even in the time of Rhodesia, were giving money to Israel. They were working to build up Israel. They sent money from South Africa to Israel. Even the Rhodesian Jews did this. Of course, my thoughts are, if you're so in love with Israel, why don't you move there? But of course they don't, because they want to make money. The money is more here in South Africa. Israel is for when they've made the money and they need to make a run for it. And all the nonsense that was spoken about, oh, the truly great South Africa of the future, it's going to be so great. And what I'm really enjoying is the fact that even since the time when this was done, which was in 2018, it's almost 2 years ago, it's August 2020 now, that in that time it's just been downhill for South Africa, downhill for the economy, and COVID has just been like a bullet into their head. So their dreams are not coming true so nicely, and I'm glad to see that South Africa is sinking. But it annoys me to hear them, oh, the future is so great. And in the 2013 talk, you heard the chief rabbi saying Jews are not into prophecy, they're into creating the future. So that should show you they're busy meddling in the country's future. And if you look at the undertones of him and Ramaphosa, they are anti-white. They're anti-white. That should be the message there. Both of them are anti-white. They're not talking about no future that includes whites, eh? So let's turn to Ramaphosa's nonsense. So when he joked about the Talmud and how he wants one, and he wants a copy of the Talmud, and the chief rabbi must give him the Talmud, he wants one, and he's got the Torah in his study. Notice also he said apartheid and racism, and it was an intractable problem, and everybody thought it was the most intractable problem in the world. And then he also has this nonsense about, oh, it's in our DNA and we solved it. We solved this intractable problem. No, whites had to hand over everything to you, scum. That was how the problem was solved. Whites, against their will, forced by America especially, and Britain to a lesser degree, but whites were forced to hand over something they did not want to hand over. It was such an intractable problem, but we are such clever South Africans, we fixed it. No, you didn't. The white South Africans had to give up all their positions so you scum could get it. And if it wasn't for them giving up their possessions, you wouldn't have it. Then he goes into a deep defense of anti-Semitism, hey? And notice all the evils that he lists, racism. You know, when you hear racism, you know white, anti-white. So racism, sexism, anti-Semitism, going on and on about anti-Semitism. And you will have noticed also the times when the Jews were applauding him. And then he also praised all the Jewish people who fought against apartheid. Oh, they were giants of our movement. That should show you, people, why are all these Jews being praised by the blacks? Why are the blacks praising all these Jews working against apartheid on their side? That should tell you treason, treason, more treason by Jews. Hundreds of Jews went to work and dedicate their life to destroying white rule. So that should be something you should think about. This praise coming out of the mouths of blacks, and this isn't the first time I've heard it. Be aware, white man, the Jew is not our friend. The Jew is getting praised for his work against us. And you'll see more of that later in other videos. And then he said, oh, Jews even had themselves buried in townships. And then he says, oh, our diversity is so enviable. I could break out into laughter at that. Let me warn you something. Get away from the fairy tales. Diversity weakens you. Don't believe the fairy tales. Diversity does not strengthen you. It weakens you. but leave them to believe the diversity fairy tale, you'll see that that thing is weaker than you think. It's a house of cards. Then his call to action, jobs, 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 and more jobs. But what I laugh at is that the screeching of the blacks is for jobs. Blacks are crying for jobs more and more every day. And it's just getting worse. And COVID has made it many times worse. And now South Africa's unemployment is hitting levels never seen in history. 30% unemployment, and that's even by the lying official statistics. They say 10 million unemployed. So you must know, out of a population of about 59 million, there's probably a workforce of about 30 million, and a third of them are sitting without jobs. It is beautiful. And so, if the cry already was jobs, jobs, jobs in 2018, I can tell you by 2020, oh, it's beautiful. It's just going downhill faster than ever before. And the blacks are breeding like rabbits, so you must know, due to their breeding, due to their uncontrolled breeding, and the economy imploding and being mismanaged and all that, oh, it's beautiful. It's just fantastic. I love it so much. Those of you who've watched my videos about strategy versus tactics, take note, take note. Here is a perfect example of the enemy talking about strategy. We want more jobs. We're going to fix the economy. We're going to do this. We're going to do that. And what happens? The opposite is happening. Despite all their efforts, despite all their things, it's just getting worse. So that is beautiful. I just about fell on my back when he said something like, I think he said $100 billion of investment. $100 billion of investment? I don't think so. I don't think so. And I'm happy. I'm happy. I'm happy. The money's fleeing the country and I'm happy. Let it flee more. Let these people get into a real tight spot. So they are out of touch with reality, and I do enjoy it. I do enjoy it when my enemies are out of touch with reality. This is good for us whites. Then you will have been treated to a whole bunch of fancy, worthless, bold talk. Oh, we're going to do this, and we're going to take care of corruption, and the Jews were clapping, and we're going to do this, and we're going to do that. You're in South Africa. I saw this in the corporate world. In the corporate world, man, I'm telling you, if they could just have Olympic sports for talking up a storm, South Africa would win first place, second place, gold medal, silver medal, bronze medal, all the follow-ups. That is South Africa. South Africa under black rule. Everybody talks up a storm. You'd think that we can go to the moon tomorrow. You'd think the most incredible things are possible. Meanwhile, the simplest things are not even possible. Oh, it's beautiful. I just love it. So all that bold, intelligent-sounding, fancy, hectic stuff. Oh, we're going to do this and we're going to do that. Just chill on that. None of that's going to happen. If even 20% of that happens, you'll be lucky. I don't think even 10% of it's even possible for them. So I just love that. Don't buy into any of that. None of it's going to come true. None of it. So, you know, for me, when I listen to all this positive yet worthless nonsense, I just laugh at it. And I'm happy to see that my enemy is living in la-la land, that their brains have been melted. And that's beautiful. They don't know how bad their situation is. I love it. Notice also the praise given to the Jew, Joe Slovo. He was, a Lithuanian communist. He was the number one Jew who ran the South African Communist Party for decades. He was one of the key people in the war against the whites, Joe Slovo. Many South Africans don't know that. So, Joe Slovo. And when he mentioned the woman Ruth First was Joe Slovo's wife. She got blown away by a parcel bomb sent by the white government under apartheid. They sent a parcel bomb to kill Slovo, but his wife opened the parcel and she was blown away from the earth. She was on a quick exit of planet Earth, thanks to the explosives of apartheid. Then Ramaphosa also talked his nonsense about apartheid and colonialism and what a devastating impact it had on their people. What a load of crap that is. Devastating impact on their people. No, it didn't. Their people, who were few in number, exploded in population probably 100-fold in the time of white rule, from the time the whites came and started dealing with them under colonialism until now. Their population probably exploded 100-fold. And then he went on to compare it to the fake Holocaust in Germany. Oh God, you know, colonialism and apartheid, it was like the Holocaust to the Jews. What a load of crap. What a load of crap. One liar on top of another. Then when he went to talk about land reform, what he was really talking about was the seizure of land. Land reform had already been dealt with 25 years earlier. More than 20 years ago, land reform was already sorted out. The processes were in place. Everything's been done according to the rules. Everything's even been extended. The original deadlines was extended over and over again. They're carrying on with something that should have been finished already almost 20 years ago. I'm not joking with you. This is a thing that they just can't let go of. This is a big bone of contention, this thing. This thing can lead to big trouble. And my view has always been, whites should fight for the land. Whites should not allow them to seize property without compensation. Should not allow it, period. And again, when Ramaphosa said, they brought an end to the nightmare of apartheid. All these things are highly overstated, okay? These things are highly overstated. But notice the hostility to white rule. That's the key thing here. Whenever they criticize apartheid, they're spitting in the face of whites. I kind of smiled that when he had to quote history, that he had to quote European and Western history. Oh, the French Revolution, the Russian Revolution, and now we have a revolution in South Africa. And we solved the apartheid nightmare. Oh, what nonsense. And of course, they have to quote Western history because their own history doesn't have much to talk about, eh? Their own history at that point in time, they were all living in huts. And another one that had me laughing was, we have this DNA in ourselves to solve problems. Well, if you know what you're talking about and you're admitting that DNA exists, then there's a bunch of other things about DNA that you should also be willing to admit, but which the blacks won't dare to touch. They then went and quoted a thing called the Freedom Charter. My understanding is that the Freedom Charter may have been almost exclusively written by Jews. Yet, these blacks in South Africa regard the Freedom Charter as a kind of a religious document. It's actually communism as well, by the way, the Freedom Charter. But I think some Jews actually wrote it. I heard that somewhere. Yeah, and again when he mentioned apartheid tyranny, really ticks me off, I must tell you. And then he was also mentioning the Jewish leaders who are going to work with government. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Putting those greedy fingers into the pie. That's what all these Jews want. And now that they got their man and they're going to get a good share of the pie, much more of the pie than they already had. And as it was, they already had too much already long time ago. And another thing that Ramaphosa said, which, as I tell you, these people are out of touch with reality, but I love this, is he was saying, oh, the recession that they currently have is temporary. It wasn't temporary, it carried on, and then came COVID. And now it's really bad, and it's nosediving into the ground. So it's fantastic. It was like a plane limping along on one engine, and then the fucking nose falls off and the thing starts diving into the ground. So, fantastic stuff. Those of you who've watched my videos discussing strategy versus tactics, classic example of strategy versus tactics. Listen to them talk, listen to them predict things, listen to how wrong they are, listen to how their plane is falling out of the sky on fire. So imagine the plane falling out of the sky on fire, its wings falling off, the thing burning and smoking, and it's heading into the ground, nose diving, and they're saying, no, no, it's going to be okay, it's going to be okay. When we're just 6 feet off the ground, it's suddenly going to stop, and we're going to float back to 30,000 feet. And I'm going to enjoy the crash. I will enjoy it, and I will love every minute and second of it. So yeah, after all his bold bullshit talk, know-all, and the Jews were applauding. Oh, they're going to follow this man, this black man, we're going to follow him. Because they know he's one of the tribe. Our black tribe member, he's there. He's going to look after us and we're going to look after him. That's the deal here, man, I'm telling you. So, now that you've seen some of Ramaphosa, I hope that you will have some good thoughts about this guy. Do you think this guy converted to Judaism? I'm telling you, man, I'm convinced. I'm convinced as hell. This guy converted to Judaism about 10 years ago. Probably a bit more than 10 years ago. I don't know the exact time, but it's somewhere, I'd say, between 2010 and 2012. Which means he must have been at it for like a year or two at least before then. And I can't remember who it was who told me that a Jewish lawyer, told him in 2012 that Ramaphosa is going to be the next president. Oh, these Jews have been busy. These Jews have been busy working on the blacks. How's it going to work out? Well, my prediction is, when I've watched the Jews and the blacks, my prediction is, ultimately, this thing is not working that well. It's actually not working that well. They may have manipulated the whites, but the whites were more competent. They may be able to manipulate the blacks to a certain degree, maybe even to quite a great degree, but I don't see any of this flying. I think lots of things are falling apart for them. And I especially watched it in the Jewish moves in the DA, the Democratic Alliance. They and the blacks were clashing quite a bit, to such a point that they had to get the Jewish hag, Helen Ziller, to even seize control back of the Democratic Alliance. Because when they left it in the hands of the blacks, it was just falling apart at the seams. So I reckon the Jewish plan with the non-whites ain't flying so well. This plane has got like a wing and maybe a wing and a half a wing and a bit of an engine. But other than that, I don't think this thing is going to fly at 30,000 feet. I don't think this thing is going to be able to stay up in the air. And in the end, I think the Jews and the blacks are both going to be fleeing in opposite directions. So I want to tell the rest of you whites outside in the rest of the world, don't get too excited about the Jews teaming up with the non-whites. It's not that hot. It's not that good. And the Jews are not that good at it. I'm telling you, these Boers, these whites of South Africa, they've still got some tricks up their sleeve. They know this country like the back of their hand. They're not just first and second generation Jews who are here. These people have been here for 300, almost 400 years. In fact, the other day I saw that my family has been in South Africa since 1726. So by 2026, my family, which apparently is Prussian, I think, my family will have been in South Africa for 300 years. So we're not such newbies. We've been around, we know these blacks, and everything we've told other whites about the blacks is true. So I think the Jewish House of Cards, how's it working out? I think even Jews are worried. And the Jewish population has been going down in South Africa. They already said it was 75,000. About 12 years ago. About 12 years ago, my Jewish friend inadvertently admitted it was down to 75,000. they claim that the Jewish population at its height was 125,000. I don't buy that. I remember hearing that the Jewish population of South Africa at its height was 180,000, not 125,000 that they talk about now. It was 180,000. In which case, the Jewish population's fallen down by well over half. And then I saw a news report that said, about 3 years or so ago, there was a news report that said that the Jewish population is now 70,000, so down from 75,000 in 2008 to about 70,000 in about 2016, 2017. And then they said that they're going to announce the Jewish population, but it's going to shock people. And I think it must be then below 70,000. But I've not seen new numbers being published. So Jews may be fleeing South Africa quite a bit more than you think. And maybe they're already at 65 or 60,000 or something. So I don't think things are going that well for the Jewish ship. I think the Jewish ship is sinking. And they're betting on a dead horse. They're betting on a guaranteed dead horse. So, you know, who's going to be running? Who's going to be fleeing? It's going to be a case of which crook manages to get the money out of the country. Can Ramaphosa get into Israel? I think that Ramaphosa is not doing that well. Despite his original popularity among the blacks, and another thing, every move Ramaphosa's made, the Jewish mass media, the liberal mass media, has been going crazy in support of Ramaphosa. They even coined a term for it. They called it Ramaphoria. And when they were doing it, I saw, now this is just unnatural bullshit. So I knew that all the praise was coming from orders from above. So they were carrying on, oh, Ramaphosa this, Ramaphosa that, he's going to fix the country, he's going to do this. Then 3 months or 6 months later, everyone's saying, but you know, he actually failed. He failed to do any of these great things, and he's even sucking, even compared to the other black leaders. So Ramaphosa's terms, I must tell you, Ramaphosa's actually going from bad to worse. And everything he says, it's not even close to what it should be. He's even performing worse than the other black presidents. It's fantastic. It's fantastic. So here are the Jews, and they're standing there. Oh, no, this guy's the greatest. He's a genius. He's fantastic. He's the Superman. And then, meanwhile, the whole fucking thing's just falling apart. I love it. I love it. I love watching the enemies of the whites sinking. I love watching the scum going down. I'm enjoying it. Egg on their face almost every step of the way as they're busy talking their storm, making up their fake plans, talking about the great things they're going to do. And notice also the Jews talking about their charity. Oh, we do so much charity work and we assist everybody. That's all the stuff that they go and do for the black children. Do you ever see anything done for the white children? Never, never. The poor little white kids, they don't get none of that stuff. These people are our enemies, I tell you. And there is their latest puppet, their greatest puppet. They also had a puppet in the Democratic Alliance. He was a black Christian who'd married a white woman. And I'm not sure if she's truly white or whether she's Jewish. But they had this black Christian, and he was also their face. And he was a big flop. I think he might even have been replaced by a white man. I just don't even bother about half their politics. But lots of their stuff is not working. And you can see they're trying their damnedest. And I'm loving it. I'm loving it. But their greatest puppet, Ramaphosa, there's your man. There's your man. He may even have converted to the tribe's values. And he's probably going to be retiring to Tel Aviv and Jerusalem. You'll still know. And if he's truly Jewish, he's got to be circumcised. Now, I don't want to be the one to find out about this, but it would be worth trying to see if anybody can ever get some of those girlfriends he's been boinking if any of those girlfriends would let the little cat out of the bag, because if Mr. Ramaphosa's been circumcised, then you know he's a Jew. So yeah, there it is for you. Why I believe this Ramaphosa character is a freaking Jew. He's gone all the way through. Billionaire, making the money, loaded, him and his brother, scam artists. They're stealing from the country's economy, left, right and center, loading up on that gravy train. And I think he learned that, yeah, you want to get seriously rich? You just join the tribe, man. Money will flow to you like a freaking river. In his case, like a freaking sea being driven by a tsunami. So, there you have it. The Black Jew. I did do something on the Jewish connections of Trevor Noah. He's not quite a Jew, but his dad, his quotes, white dad from Switzerland, he was a Jew. Trevor Noah is mixed race and his mother's black. And his mother converted to Judaism afterwards. And he even had a bar mitzvah. So let me tell you, Jews have been boinking the non-whites. Jews have been converting some of these blacks. So they are converted, these people. They are now members of the tribe. But Ramaphosa may be their greatest win of all. They're looking at the Black Jew, South Africa's first black Jewish president. And that would make him the first Jew to rule South Africa. And the Jews hated the real guy, Dr. Hendrik Verwoerd. Don't miss my video coming up, Dr. Hendrik Verwoerd and how the Jews killed the greatest white leader in the history of South Africa. Jews killed the greatest white leader in the history of South Africa. Probably the greatest white man who ruled any country in Southern Africa in the last 500 years. I'm not kidding you. He's Dutch, born in the Netherlands. He was a National Socialist, meaning he's a Nazi. The Jews refer to him as the architect of apartheid. Jews and liberals, they hate him. They refer to him as the architect of apartheid. So don't miss my video. You're going to hear the unbelievable and incredible story that almost nobody knows of how Jews killed the greatest white leader in the history of South Africa. So they killed the greatest white leader in the history of South Africa. They got their black communist lawyer to become a puppet and to go and start doing terrorism. These people worked to destroy white power in South Africa, Jews. And here they are talking up a storm with their black puppet that they finally got into place. Now they think they've got the whole thing rigged. I don't think it's going to work that well for them. These are my websites, historyreview.com, africancrisis.info, and white-shop.biz. This is my attempt to try and do some Jew-free trading and experimenting with the next level of stuff. So, thank you very much for listening. We'll be chatting again soon. Take care of yourselves.